Please help me welcome J. Lauren Norris.
When I grew up, there was a country song that my mom used to listen to all the time where the chorus line said, "I wish a Ford and a Chevy would still last 20 years like they should." Commitment. It's a thing of the past. Or is it? Loyalty to your company, to your friends, to your family, to your country. Is it a thing of the past? Where does commitment come from? And as a leader, how do you build it in your team? That's what I want to talk about in this episode of Leading Leaders. Stay tuned. I'm J. Lauren Norris with Leading Leaders Podcast, and it's pretty fascinating to me how things change over time. What we consider commitment or loyalty. In fact, if you ask young people today, what's your dining mode of choice? Many of them will say, well, I don't like to cook, I'd rather eat out. And yet when they describe eating out, they're really not talking about going to a place and sitting down and enjoying a meal while they're there. So the atmosphere really doesn't matter much. And sometimes the quality of the food doesn't really matter much. There's a whole different standard of measure for what matters. It's, does it get here on time? Or does it get here hot? Or is it cheap? Do they cover the delivery fee? But will I get it through DoorDash or Uber Eats or some other form of delivery? Young people today, and when I say young people, I mean 25 and below, but 30-year-olds still are beginning to fall into this category too. It's a whole lot easier never to get off the couch just to pick up your digital device and send a little message and place an order. And even if you have to pay a little extra to get it delivered, hey, you didn't have to put your shoes on. You never had to get out of your pajamas. You don't even have to get in the car. You didn't spend any of your own gas money. So if there's a little delivery fee, or if I get that coupon for free delivery for anything over $25, maybe I'll throw in an extra taco just because it'll push me over the top. And a $2 taco versus a $5 delivery charge, I win. That's a $3 savings. Yeah, that's like the people who say, I went shoe shopping, not because I needed shoes, but because they were on sale. Yeah, it's the same kind of philosophy. But see, neither one of those are a commitment to the process. It used to be that when you got a job as an apprentice or as an intern, and you learned the process of the job, you learned the details of the job, you learned how to do the job, what tools were needed, what are the best practices. And we kind of traded that apprenticeship process for the college process. Well, the college process these days, you're learning a whole lot more than the trade, the industry, the skill, the education necessary to perform the job. You learn about all kinds of social stuff, learn about all kinds of global mechanisms, about global politics, geopolitics, geothermal warming, weather modification, how to control population through vaccination. Yeah, that's what they're talking about. If you think I'm crazy, go spend a couple of days on a college campus and listen to everything from the political rhetoric to the social manipulation and ask yourself how much of that has to do with the degree program. Unless you're in poli-sci or in the medical field, probably not much. And yet, it dominates a lot of the conversation. And if you think I'm crazy, just ask the people who used to be professors on these college campuses one generation ago what they think of today's college campuses and the type of students that are graduating and the kinds of jobs that they're getting and the kinds of student loan debt that they're carrying. And ask yourself this question. Back in the day when a neighborhood would see a group of people move in, and I'm not talking about class, I'm not talking about race, I'm talking about a group of people. Maybe they all just came back from war. Maybe they all just graduated from college. I remember when we moved to Cedar Hill. Cedar Hill, Texas was a place where they had just built a collider. Not as big as CERN, but something like that. And in Cedar Hill, there were a lot of people who were MIT graduates. They were physics majors. They were quantum physics studiers. They were high-level, highly intellectual, well-paid scientists. Ironically, there were a lot of them that were highly paid, highly skilled, highly educated African-American scientists. And so when we moved into Cedar Hill in the early 2000s, 2018-ish, that neighborhood, that city was about 40,000 people and 65% African-American, with one of the highest average household incomes in the entire Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex, especially among African-Americans. Why? The grouping of people that came there came for jobs of a specific nature in a specific industry, which required a specific education. There were a lot of highly educated, well-paid people who moved to that area for those very specific jobs. And they stayed. And there were people that lived on the street that we lived on. There was a guy who lived next door to us who was retired Army officer and also retired from the police department and the sheriff's department. He was in that house from the day it was built. The guy we bought our house from built his house from the ground up, stayed in it for over 20 years. It was the norm in a neighborhood to have your neighbors be the same neighbors from the times your kids were putting their shoes and socks on by themselves until they graduated from college. It was the norm to live in a neighborhood where you knew the people around you. They weren't transient neighbors. They weren't the guys that were there last week and then a different people this week and then a different people 2 weeks later. Because people like that, they're not committed to your neighborhood. They're not concerned about doing 60 miles an hour through your neighborhood. People that are transient to your neighborhood, they don't see it as theirs. They treat it however they want to. Kind of like when you don't have the compassion or the concern or the commitment to borrow somebody's tools and return them better than you found them. No, you take it, you use it, and if you get it back, you get it back. And if you don't, you don't. And if it's broke, tough. Sorry. Hate that your tool got broken. Kind of sucks. Wish it hadn't, but it did. I'm carrying on. Yeah, that kind of attitude has shifted in our culture. The idea of starting as an apprentice and working in the same company, whether it's a collider or a manufacturing or retail or restaurant industry, until you retire. A government job. A firefighter, a civil servant of some sort, getting in that job in your late teens and early 20s and staying in that job until you're old enough to retire, staying in the same house, in the same relationship, with the same neighbors, the same social circles. Let me say that right. That idea is a thing of the past. I mean, we have young people today, 18 to 30 years old, who would rather live in a van down by the river and run an online business, taking pictures of their feet and making millions of dollars doing it. I'll reference again the young lady who bought a $2 million ranch in cash and in her own evidenced expression, she says, most women don't know how I paid cash for my ranch, but their husbands do. Don't make me explain that. That's a scary, frightening thought. She doesn't have a job. She doesn't have a career. She has a fetish that makes her a lot of money. And her fetish makes a lot of money because other people have a fetish. And all of this goes back to the concept of being self-absorbed. It goes back to the idea that people are not committed to a process, to a place, to a thing, to other people. They're committed to their own selfish ambition. That's it. They're narcissistic internally. They're grown-up toddlers. They're full-grown infants. That's it. That's all there is. And so as a leader, you might ask yourself, how do we change that? How do we shift it? Where do we find the place where the people on our team are committed to the team? Well, good luck with that. Because the problem isn't their loyalty to the team. It's that they don't see team. They've kind of been abandoned by the process. See, I worked through that era where we had the concept, because it was our parents' concept, that you're an apprentice, you stick with the job. Yes, you're going to have bad days. Yes, you're going to have bad bosses. Yes, sometimes the season's just going to straight up suck. Suck it up, buttercup. Go to work anyway. You don't feel good? Throw up at a lunch break. Get to work. Do your job. Get your paycheck. Pay for your house. Stay loyal to your family. Pay off your car. Pay off your house. Pay off your college. That's on you. It's all you. It's all up to you. You have to do it. That loyalty, that commitment was ingrained in us from an early age. But I also grew up in the age after the military where I worked in one company from the time they hired me until the time I left was over 10 years. But four times I was laid off by the same company and then hired back. Not fired for cause, just laid off, just let go. It's not in our budget this season. Wait, what? And so four different times lost my 401k. Four different times lost the investment that I had set aside in my retirement. Four different times lost everything that I had invested in my future. Well, over a 10-year period, you got to look at that and go, what have I been loyal to you for? I keep coming back, but you're not loyal to me. And eventually, the fourth time they laid me off, I said, you know what? That's it. Just give me whatever's left of my 401k, which wasn't even enough to pay off a new car. And give me whatever retirement I have coming, which was zero. And I walked away. I was all done with corporate America. I found that being loyal to my family, being loyal to myself, looked like getting out there and hustling and finding ways to make ends meet and finding ways to do what I'm put on this earth to do. And they don't look anything like serving corporate America from apprentice to pension. See, there's something that shifted there. Something shifted in me. I have one child who's been in the same industry for 12 years. But recently was really burned by that industry and said, I'm not sure I'm a fan anymore. I don't know that I'll ever go back to that part of the industry. It's still my education. It's still what I've invested the most in. It's still what I love. But that part of the job hurt me. That loyalty is fading. That commitment is on the rocks. I have another one who's been at the same company in the same job just over 3 years now. Same company, same job, same position. One raise. Still doesn't match what they make at McDonald's starting day. Still doesn't make the same amount of money by the hour that they make to clean the bathrooms at Buc-ee's. 3 years of loyalty, 3 years of showing up at 4 o'clock in the morning to make sure the floors were done and the store was open, staying till 9, 10, 11 o'clock at night for inventory to happen. Long days, long hours, odd schedules, but loyal, committed, showing up, doing the job. And what comes in return? Odd schedules, long hours, and low pay. It's hard if you're the leader and that's what you offer to find commitment in your team. Loyalty, like respect, is a two-way street. If you're committed to me, it's a whole lot easier for me to be committed to you. 30 years into my marriage, I look back and I realize the first 10 years I put my wife and my family through hell because there was something wrong with me. There was a lot wrong with me. There's still a lot wrong with me, but there's less wrong with me now than there was then. 20 years after most of those habits were broken, dismantled, and removed from my life, 20 years later, we have a much happier marriage. But if she hadn't been committed to me the first 10 years when there was nothing going right, it might have been really hard for us to stay together for 30 years. Commitment, loyalty, respect, it's a two-way street. If you want your team to be committed, guess what you got to do? You got to be committed to them. And one of the things that you're going to have to realize in being committed to them is what they expect of you as commitment. See, it's real easy as a leader to say, I expect you to show up on time. I expect you to do your work hard. I expect you to give me your very best while you're here. I expect you to pay attention, put your phone down, do what the job requires of you. Now, these digital devices have become so addictive that even my son, who I've raised from birth, who I've taught these principles every day of his life, when we work together, there are times that I need him to be looking at me and paying attention to what I'm doing for the next cue on the camera, on the microphone, so we know what's coming next and we can predict that together and I can just give him that look out of the corner of my eye and not have to wave, not have to jump up and down and send flares up to get his attention. And yet there are still days that even in the midst of an event, I'll look over and he's buried in his phone in the doom scroll. I'm like, dude, just Just be present. Wait till the food comes or something. Just be present and paying attention to me. Anytime I walk away from here, I need you to know where I'm at and what I'm doing. They need to know what your expectations are of them, but you need to know as a leader what their expectations are of you. What does loyalty look like for them? What does commitment look like from them? What do they want of you as a leader? It's a whole lot easier when you've got that two-way street clearly defined. It's a whole lot easier when you allow room for them, whether you call it an open door policy or you have an email chain or you have a public forum or you have a town hall meeting on a regular basis. It's a whole lot easier for them to come back and say, here's what our expectations are. We don't feel like they're being met. Now, remember I said, this is a generation that is significantly driven internal passions, motivations, and wants by their own selfish ambition. They have their own strategic goals in mind, and it's about them, not about we, not about us, about me. Almost solely about me, about how do I get mine? How do I get ahead? And at the same time, they're being filled with all these social contagions about their identity, their sexuality, their choices of relationship, their skin color, their religious beliefs, their political ideologies, their affiliations. And in some of those cases, their simple alignment with an ideology to say, oh, I think that's a good idea. That alone is enough of a social contagion to cost them friendships. True story. Do any amount of research and you will find it to be true. There are people who have been kicked out of college because of their political beliefs. That makes you question the things you're committed to. That makes you wonder, does anybody believe like I believe? It's a tactic, a social tactic, a cultural manipulation tactic, specifically designed to isolate people who think for themselves, to create groupthink. Now, ask yourself this as a leader. If I know that I have somebody on my team who is an independent thinker, chances are they're going to have a little bit of a rebellious nature, a little bit of a tendency to do things their own way. In fact, there are going to be some of them that the core of them says, I don't care what you tell me to do. If you tell me the sun is shining and the sky is blue, I'm going to look outside and be determined to find a raindrop. Because that's what the rebellious nature does. If you tell me that I can't do this or that I'm going to fail if I do that, guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to do it just to prove you wrong. Now, if you know this about the nature of the people on your team, then the way you lead them to commitment is different than the person who says, just tell me what to do. I'm all in. Just put me in the game, coach. I'm all in. I will do whatever you tell me to do. I will do whatever is necessary. I just want to make this happen. I'm here for us until the very end. I'm here to see this project through. If you have people on your team with that level of commitment because it's an internal commitment to excellence, that's a whole different ballgame than those people who say, I don't care what you tell me to do, I'm going to do the opposite. I don't care what you need me to do, I'm going to do what I want to do. I don't care what the team desires of me, I have my own ambitions and goals, and that's what I'm committed to. When you can realize that as a leader, when you can dissect those moments of meaning, find out what their purpose is, find out what their passions are, find out what drives them, then you can alter your expectations just enough to fit within their passions. And when you can do that, you will find that they are committed because you've given them space to be committed within their realm of expectation already. Now, the leader who comes in with that tyrannical block and says, it will look like this, it will sound like this, it will feel like this, you will agree with this idea, or you can be gone. You got no commitment to them. Guess how much commitment they have to you? Exactly. Zero, zip, zilch, nada. None. None at all. They will not stay around for what they believe to be mistreatment. If you don't recognize that they have their own identities and their own ideologies, if you don't give them space to acknowledge those things verbally in behavior and character, then they're going to be gone. Now, the place where you've also got to show that commitment is if you have a set of ideals, principles, core values that your organization is based on, driven by, motivated by. This is where the oxymoron steps in, because this is an absolute truth. You will find it to be true more often than you can imagine. Many young people today are so confused about what it means to be committed. They don't know what core values and principles look like because they have been manipulated by the winds of change and social manipulation and social contagions to the degree that they don't know what they stand for. They don't know what they believe. And the first person to put a pole in the ground and go, this is where I stand, live or die. This is what I believe in, right or wrong. I will hold on to this until you convince me there's something better, something more true, something more accurate, something right. And I've missed it. The minute you show me that, I will move to what is now right and true and admit that I was wrong. But until then, I'm not moving. Watch young people today, whether it's the protests or the riots or whatever you want to call them. And what you'll see is that they're longing to find something strong enough to believe in, that they can count on it when times are hard. That they can look back and go, I was a part of that. I brought about change. I brought about transformation. I brought the recognition and the awareness that what we were doing was wrong and what we're now doing is right. Look at the civil rights movement as a good example of that. Sadly, that deep motivation in people that calls out the greatest level of loyalty and commitment in them, in their intrinsic motivations, even that is being manipulated. Even that is being challenged. Even that is being treated whimsically. Again, I go back to the idea that to be ostracized, to be cast out. I was listening yesterday of a news report of a 7-year-old girl who was treated in an inappropriate manner in a public school. But rather than school admitting, yeah, that should have never happened, that was a bad idea, they moved the little girl to a new set of friends. They changed her class structure. They took her away from the teacher that she knew because the teacher didn't want to apologize for how it happened. Social contagion. She's now a reject. Yeah. She's the pariah. She's the one nobody wants to hang out with. She's the little girl who cried wolf. She's the problem. She's a 7-year-old who said, that wasn't supposed to happen to me. And rather than say, you're right, that wasn't supposed to happen to you, we shouldn't let that happen. No commitment to her identity, to her values, to her personhood. But all of a sudden, the social contagion that says, if you speak up, you will be isolated. If you express your ideas, canceled. If you say what you think is right, yeah, we're done with you. Society will cast you out. You will think like everybody else, behave like everybody else, do what everybody else does, or it will cost you. See, that's the challenge that our young people are having today. When you ask them, will you be committed to the team? Will there be commitment from you toward us? The answer is, I don't know. What will it cost me? What's the price I'll have to pay for being loyal to your ideas, to your projects, to your wherewithal? If I'm committed to making sure that your business is profitable, what's in it for me? Or will there be a day when I realize the entire industry was a joke? The entire industry was false? There was a bank recently that vanished with billions of dollars, where a lot of people, from celebrities to politicians to everyday Joes, had put their life savings into this particular bank. They followed a young man, Mr. Fried, who had them completely convinced that he had it all figured out. He was a social revolutionary. He was going to change the world. He showed up to the most important meetings in the world, United Nations, Congress, in his shorts and flip-flops and tank tops and hoodies. He told the world, I can do this my way and you will like it because I have so much money and so much influence. And well, now he's in prison and a whole lot of people have lost a whole lot of money, a whole lot of influence, a whole lot of opportunity. Wherein is the commitment? To whom was he committed? Self, social change, manipulation, social contagions. That was his MO, selfish ambition, get famous, make money, change the world my way. No commitment to team, no commitment to all the people whose lives were devastated by his manipulations. No commitment to them at all. What's the fallout? Lots of people lost a lot. If you're not going to be committed to the people who are going to commit themselves to you, then what do they have to gain? Why would they do it? What's the sacrifice they're going to pay? Those are questions you better ask. You better ask early. You better ask honestly. I was listening today to just a really quick video clip where the person sharing his idea of his own definition of leadership said before he gave the statement, he said, "It took me 32 years to write this statement." 32 years to write this statement that I'm going to share with you. And I said, that's pretty impressive. And I have to ask the question of most leaders, how long do you spend thinking about what you're going to say before you say it? How long do you chew on those ideas that you put out there before you ask yourself, will this statement get me canceled? Will the statement cost me everything? Could I change one word in this statement and say the same thing or better? The answer to that question is completely up to you. But the truth of the matter is, it's completely up to you. The commitment that you exude, the commitment that you offer to the people on your team, well, it'll be seen in that statement. Have you put a stake in the ground? Are you willing to stand there no matter what? Do you hold fast to the things that you say you believe in? Or do you move every time the wind changes and the social mores change? And do you let social contagions change what you think about culture and life and politics? If you're not committed to what you say you believe, then you're not committed to the people who join your team. And commitment from them, it's not going to happen. If you want to see commitment, be committed. If you want to be committed to other people, first be committed to yourself, to your principles, to your values, to what you believe, to what you know to be true. If you're not committed to that, don't expect anybody to be committed to you. I'm J. Lauren Norris with Leading Leaders Podcast for Tell It Like It Is TV. Have a blessed day.
Lauren is a master teacher on storytelling, and I learned so much. I'm really going to have to sit down and go back through everything, and I think I might have to have some more coffees with Lauren, but it was totally worth my time, and I really highly recommend it if you're looking to grow your ministry, grow your business, grow your career. Lauren will serve you well.
Thank you.
Subscribe now for our extensive video library of leadership lessons promoting faith, family, and freedom.